Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sarah Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness in today's show. We'll be taking your calls and we'll be responding to your email questions. So keep it tuned here and we'll be right back. Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sarah Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
It is good evening where you are.
It is.
Wow.
It's so fun to be having this perspective.
Yes. Mm-hmm. How are you?
Where or how?
How. And I then we'll get to where.
Okay. I'm exceedingly well.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And yourself?
I'm great. I'm great.
Good. And you're holding down the fort out there?
We're holding down the fort on the West Coast.
Excellent. Excellent. It's in good hands.
It's in good hands.
All right. Good.
And how's the East Coast?
I'm here in Asheville.
Yes.
Or very near Asheville, North Carolina, where I get to talk to the good folks on Thursday evening.
Great.
At a public talk.
Yes.
Yes, just left Athens, Georgia this morning, had a great time with folks there, and over the weekend, of course, I got to visit folks in Raleigh, so it's been a good time.
Great.
Mm-hmm. I like this. I like this, just traveling around, meeting nice people.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sherry, I have some exciting news.
What's that?
I've just learned that podcasts of Open Air are now available at livingcompassion.org.
Wow. Now, would you say a little bit about what that means for those of us?
I was afraid you were going to ask that.
Are still in some other century?
So, with a podcast, you can subscribe to have the most recent Open Air show downloaded to your computer automatically once a week.
Uh-huh. Now, you say subscribe. Is this going to cost me money?
No, it's an absolutely free subscription.
Subscription?
Money back guaranteed.
Wow.
No money back guaranteed.
I was actually kind of afraid that you were going to say, yeah, there's a charge. And so I really like that news that it's free. And, of course, as we always point out, being religious types, we will accept any donation that anybody would like to make ever.
Yeah.
But it's not a requirement for getting a download of the shows. That's very fun.
Yes. And from there, if you have an MP3 player or an iPod, you can download it to that and take it with you when you're out for a walk or on a run or whatever you're doing.
I love that.
That's great.
That's very, very fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just go to livingcompassion.org and click on What's New, and you'll have all the information you need.
Very good.
Good.
Yeah.
So, Sherry, you'll be in Asheville on Thursday evening.
That is correct.
For a public talk.
Yeah, for a public talk somewhere.
Somewhere.
I hope it's on the website. I have no idea. Somebody will take me and make sure that I get there.
Okay, great.
And if people are anywhere in the area, we'd love it if you'd come out and say hey.
That's great. Mm-hmm. And you can find the location information at livingcompassion.org or sherryhuber.com. And I do not have it in front of me in this moment.
Okay.
What I do have in front of me is a caller.
Very good.
I'd like to welcome John from Los Angeles. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening, John.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you.
Good. What's going on?
Well, I've been wanting to call in for really quite a while.
Uh-huh.
And every time I've wanted to do it, well, something has come up, which obviously I haven't called in.
Uh-huh.
So today I said, well, today I'm calling in.
Today nothing is going to come up.
Well, things came up, but they just weren't allowed to get in the way.
That's right. That's the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very good to hear your voice. I've been thinking a lot about practice and participation and the ideas of support in terms of my own practice and in terms of how one goes about seeking that and you know creating that, mm-hmm. a sense of sangha and participation in life.
Mm-hmm.
And in general, my practice has been that really things have been deepening and really moving towards service and being available, and really great, magical, fun things have been happening. And at the same time, I've been finding myself, and here's the great part of the duality, feeling that I'm not participating in the way that I want to be, and finding that conditioning has been using that to sort of make me feel somewhat irritable and actually distant.
Yes.
Actually wanting to sort of be irritable.
Yes.
You know, and say, well, I want to participate more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how do I do this? Because I don't know what it looks like, and I don't know what you would ask for, but I know that there's a sense that, you know, that there's a feeling that I'm not, I don't know how to describe it in a way, that I'm not participating in the way that I would like to be,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to seek guidance on how to move towards that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this is going to sound silly, but I...
Somehow I doubt that.
Well, it could. And of course, I guess a lot of things could, depending on who's listening. But one way to participate the way you would like to participate is not to be grumpy or cranky or irritable or listening to conditioning say that there is something else that you could be doing that would be making a difference.
Right. That's definitely in part of the discussion. There's kind of the other side is how I'm actually living, which is sort of doing the practice,
mm-hmm.
Engaging in a lot of reflection, facilitation, and practice. And I guess maybe I can only refer to my own experience, feeling that I'm not, I don't know, because I guess if I look at it honestly, then there's some expectation that I'm doing this wrong.
Yes. Well, now that's that place that I talk about as looking to conditioned mind for information about your practice.
Right.
And it's just never a good or helpful thing to do. Because conditioned mind, as we know, is very invested in you not doing practice. So,
of course, it's
going to be pointing out what you're doing wrong and how it's not working and you could be doing more and you're not participating the way you would like. That it has an investment in that sort of conversation because it keeps you from being present and keeps you from participating the way you would like to participate.
It's subtle, isn't it? Because from my experiences is that I am doing the practice and that
yes.
even this dialogue I'm seeing is a practice opportunity.
Yes.
My irritation is a practice opportunity.
Yes. Yes.
You know, all the things that have been coming up, I've actually been bringing to my practice and going, well, that's great, but everything in my life that's changed and really become sort of quite magical as things open up has been because I refuse to sort of give in to this sort of, you know, assault is sort of yes. what it comes down to.
Yes, yes. And so it's going to, conditioned mind is just going to keep angling because every
angling.
Moment that you're in that conversation about how this isn't enough and I'm cranky and I don't really like this and I want to participate, every moment of that conversation is a moment that you're not really available here to participate with life.
Yeah, and I'm here a lot more. So I guess the question is, there seems to be, in my experience, a sticky area. There's this sticky place where I am available and open and present and really engaged with the practice. And there was a story in a class that went out that you said about the student who walks by the teacher and
uh-huh.
wonders why the teacher is, you know, not happy with him, and it turns
uh-huh.
out the teacher was dozing. I'm paraphrasing.
Uh-huh.
But that sort of expression of the student goes into this whole story about why isn't this working? You know, what have I done wrong? Why am I not uh-huh. the good student? And the
uh-huh.
teacher just was taking a nap.
Right, and it ends up with, you know, I don't like that teacher anyway.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, that's where conditioning is trying to get us with practice.
I see.
There's something wrong. There's something wrong. There's something wrong. There's something wrong. There's something wrong with me. There's something wrong with them. There's something wrong with it. You know, this isn't working. I don't like this. I don't want to do this. And when we step back a little bit and come back to center, what we get to is, you know, there really isn't anything wrong.
Everything I'm coming to that a lot more. I mean,
yeah,
a lot more. It's the experience that I'm having in general in my life as I'm practicing quite a bit more and sort of settling into the things that we talk about, not, you know, conceptually, but actually living that way, everything just keeps opening up. But yeah. There's this, I guess like there's a part of me that's responding to, you know, the letters that are going out about this is the year of participation and clear communication and wanting to sort of be participant, and then sort of feeling that where we are, at least in my sangha and where we are, is a bit isolated, and there's some sense of frustration that arises with that.
Yes.
And I think that's sort of what I'm working with and looking for guidance, I guess.
Yeah, and again, I'm just going to encourage you that that is a scam, because this is the year of participation, and because you want to participate and you like participating, then that's a place that conditioning can come in and say, well, but there's not enough of that. It needs to be more. You need to be doing more.
Right.
There's something wrong with this. And because it's the year of participation and communication, it increases your chances of believing it.
It really gets insidiously subtle at a certain point.
Yes, it does. Yeah. And so, again, what we're talking about, you know, at least from my perspective, participation is participation with life. Practice is being as fully present to life as we can possibly be in any given moment.
Right.
And so there is no content with that.
I see.
So again, kind of full circle, every moment that you're really here and awake and alive and present is a moment of participation. Once we take that step into, but it needs to look a particular way. You know, I need to be
right
with a group of people who are doing this, or I need to be at the monastery, or I need to be able to go on a lot of retreats, or that's what participation means. That's what...
Yeah, you're reading my mind, yeah.
Yeah, and as soon as we get talked into that perspective, then, of course, there's going to be something wrong because I can't do that. You know, I don't have the time. I don't have the money. Whatever it is that's stopping me. But
right,
to be fully present, you know, everybody is your sangha. Everybody is your sangha. You stop to get a cup of coffee, and the person who fixes your cup of coffee for you is sangha. You know, you stop to get gas, and the person's gas station is your sangha.
Yeah, so, I'm sensing that more and more also. It's interesting,
yeah,
because I think that the subtlety is a sticking point in my practice, because it's really beginning, it becomes more and more unconditional.
Yes.
And then there's a sort of floating quality to it where everything becomes a little kind of, I'm not sure if the word's surreal, but there's a certain, you're very present and everything's sort of just happening.
Yes, and that's that magical quality. You're just here, and it just is, and you just are, and there's no separation. So
any dialogue that's arising really is kind of something that I'm going to bring to practice, is what I'm hearing.
Yes.
Any dialogue that's arising for me is sort of an is-that-so response.
Exactly. Exactly. And then every moment is a moment of practice. Every moment is a moment of participation.
You know, that's what it feels like, and that's where I was getting a little stuck. Every moment is a moment of practice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So no ideas, no standards, no expectations. Just here, now, yes. Here, now, yes.
Wow. So is it possible to, so within that context of that framework, how does one ask out? How does one go out? And I'm not sure if I'm wording this correctly, but how does one engage when you want to connect in participation? Aside from just being present, that's it? That's just really the reduction. It's just
because
being present.
If what you've described, your experience of it is that when you are present in that way, there is magic.
That's correct.
Things open up. There are all these opportunities, and you're there to receive them and enjoy them and participate in them.
Yeah, daily.
Yeah, it's when we go out into conditioning, into that, but it needs to look like this. I want to feel like that.
Right.
I think other people are having a better life experience than I'm having. That's when we are separate and we close down and shut off, and the magic stops happening. And, of course, then that reinforces the voices that say, see, it needs to be different and what's wrong with you. We drop all of that. We accept it. Okay, yeah, that's what's going on. That's what conditioning is doing. We come back to center, and there's the magic again.
Yeah, it is just what it is.
And again, everybody is Sangha.
That's a challenge.
Yes, it is.
That's a real challenge mm-hmm. to hear everyone is Sangha.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But that's... if you don't have standards and you don't have expectations, then it becomes obvious that that is so. Everybody's trying to wake up. Everybody's trying to do the best that they can do. Everybody is working with what they've got where they are. That's true of all of us all the time. When we're at center, we want to support one another in practice, in waking up and ending suffering. When we're out in conditioning, people are competition. They're doing it wrong. They're judging me. I don't like them. This isn't working. I want better people. I want a better Sangha.
You know, different Sangha. Yeah,
sure,
I understand.
I'm
yeah.
sure I would be much more awakened if I had a better Sangha.
I don't think that would be true. But I can't imagine a better Sangha. But then if everyone's Sangha, they're, it's that whole alternate universe thing. There isn't an alternate universe.
That's right. And so we are all Sangha. And Sangha, for most of us, is, in fact, the most challenging place. Now, for you, there's a feeling of, you know, I want more Sangha, or I want to be more connected.
Well, it's the reflective aspect. If in Sangha, in at least my experience, is that the great opportunity in Sangha is not just hearing the other people, but the opportunity to reflect and be reflected.
Yes.
And isolation is sort of a feeding ground for conditioning.
Yes. And conditioning will take advantage of any situation.
Even Sangha, I would imagine. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. So when you're around people who are acknowledged practitioners, then it just brings up, for conditioning, another set of opportunities. So this person isn't doing it right, and they shouldn't be saying that, and why are they acting like that, and they're meditators and they're practitioners, and
right.
shouldn't they know better, and how can I be so judgmental of other people when I know that they're... So it's going to be the same. The content varies slightly, but not very much.
So it's a constant setup for duality.
Yes. Exactly so.
So I'm just going to keep practicing.
That's right. And so just see what it's like to, you know, go out tomorrow with the idea that this it's all a monastery and everybody's Sangha.
You always manage to just really just nail it.
Well, good.
It's such a great gift to just nail it.
Well, you do it and you let us know, okay?
All right, sure.
All right. Thanks, John.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, John. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, I think we have the theme for the show.
Uh-huh.
Everybody's Sangha.
Everybody's Sangha. Isn't it? I don't think I've ever heard myself say that or, you know, thought about it in those terms. But
yeah.
It's true. And it's such a, you know, it's a funny thing. When I was in the monastery with my teacher, at some point I got it that... although he was a very extremely wise, centered, enlightened human, the way I interacted with him, if I had treated everyone in my life the way I treated him, if I had seen everyone in my life the way I saw him,
yes.
I would have nothing but teachers in my life.
Yes.
Because what I did with him is to use everything that he said or did as a way of seeing myself.
Yes.
So I was constantly projecting onto him, and I would see my projections.
Yes.
And because I trusted that he wasn't, didn't have any evil intent anywhere, then I it was easy for me to own all of my projections.
Yes.
And so I got it. You know, I could go around in the world and treat everyone as if they were the Roshi. And it would be an endless opportunity for me to receive all of this wisdom and guidance all the time. But of course, you know, we don't want to do that. We want to say, that person is wise, and so I'm going to listen to what they say, and I'm going to try to do what they say to do. But that person is clearly a knothead, and I don't even like him. I'm certainly not going to follow their guidance or seek some kind of advice from
yeah.
them. And yet, if we did, it would all come to the same thing.
Yeah.
We would see, we would let go, and we would expand, and that's just how it would go.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Jennifer from Pennsylvania. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Absolutely. What's going on?
Well, I just left work early because I have been wanting to call in for a long time, but I work every Tuesday night, so I'm having a lot of voices saying that I shouldn't have left, but I was desperate to be able to call, so I left.
Good.
So here I am.
Because it's one of those on your deathbed. Are you going to say, I wish I hadn't called into that show, I wish I hadn't talked to those people, I wish I'd stayed at work? Probably not.
Okay, that's a good, thank you. That will help with some of the voices that are talking to me about that. So I attended the There Is Nothing Wrong With You at Rehoboth Beach this fall in November.
Uh-huh.
And it just changed my life profoundly. It was just so, so useful. Before I went to that retreat, I was actually on a track to take a medical leave from my job. I was just extremely depressed, suicidal, the whole range of it. And I was really able to get so much clarity about I don't need to believe the voices that are telling me that's the way that my life needs to be through that retreat. And I caught a little bit as I was getting here from work about the last caller kind of talking about that magic. And I felt that for the first probably month and a half that I was back from Rehoboth. I was able to see so clearly, and I was feeling... I think I was feeling really good, and it felt so great after being depressed for so many years. It just was like, wow, I have energy. I want to be with people. I want to be doing things. Life is amazing, and I'm feeling that kind of starting to close over, and I've heard you talk about, you know, conditioning can kind of get a stronghold again, and I've heard you talk about that before, and I guess what I'm noticing is just that, you know, I guess this makes sense, but it's really easy for me to accept and be loving toward the part of me that can experience life as magical and be peaceful and be happy and all these things. But when the person who's depressed or angry or irritated or, you know, all of that stuff or goes into despair, when that person comes back, I don't accept that at all. I don't want that, and I realize that this is part of the practice is learning to accept that too. But man, it's so hard, and so I think that's what I'm looking at.
Yeah. Now, have you read the depression book?
I have. Yes.
Okay. Good. So you have that right there next to you. All
yes.
Time.
I probably need to be pulling it out again, actually.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's always good. And do you have any other kind of support? Like, do you have a sitting group or? Anything like that around, or are you pretty much on your own?
No, I'm pretty much on my own. I'm actually going to come to the monastery in February because I'm just desperate to keep getting support. But, of course,
good.
I'm having a lot of, you know, I can't afford to come to the monastery every couple months either, so I need to be some supports, you know, that are around me all the time. But I started to get scared, basically, when I felt the depression really creeping back with some strength. And so I signed up to be at the monastery, so that's good. But
yeah, it is good. And, you know, one thing to keep in mind probably is that you actually can't afford not to get the support.
Yeah, that's true.
Again, conditioning, as you know, is there to talk you out of everything that's going to take care of you.
Yeah.
And so that's the bottom line commitment that you need to make, is that I'm going to choose to take care of myself in these kinds of ways, and I'm going to work very hard not to buy into these voices, because now you know what they are.
Yes.
Yeah. So, there you are. So in it comes, and the stuff, the conditioning starts in. And I don't know if you know this, at least intellectually. It's we know it intellectually a long time before we know it experientially. When you don't want to accept those parts of you who are depressed, is that it, primarily the depressed?
Yeah, I think so.
Is that the hardest part to accept?
Yes.
Yeah. When you don't want to accept that, it's because you're in conditioning.
Okay.
All right? So, you know, the the answer to our every question is get back to center. Every problem we have is answered as soon as we get back to center. So, you know, there you are, you're going along, and suddenly you're not depressed, and everything feels great, and you have energy, and you're excited, and accepting that, yes, yes, I can accept this. And it seems like that's coming from a centered place.
Yeah.
And it's probably not.
Mm.
Because what we get to see is it's conditional.
Mm-hmm.
I have acceptance for myself as long as I'm meeting standards.
Yeah.
But as soon as I don't feel the way I should feel, then I want to abandon that self and reject that self, push that self away and say, you know, I don't want anything to do with you because I want to be the person who's happy and feels good and has energy.
Yeah.
And that's the trap.
Mm-hmm.
right? Yeah.
I can totally see that, yes.
Yeah, so the work is to get back to that place of compassion. In that centered place of compassion, the thing you know is you're not that depressed person. Okay? From center, from a place of conscious, compassionate awareness, it's obvious that that depressed part of you is not your authentic nature. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you know, then of course I just go into all the, and this is, you know, a way that I kind of beat myself up when I'm there. I mean, I do have some awareness of that, but then I go with, well, why can't I get back to center, you know, and I
well,
give myself a hard time about
here,
that
here's
one.
The, and of course, that's coming from out of center, too.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard me talk about this, but center is a room where all the lights are on.
Mm-hmm.
Conditioning is a room where all the lights are off. So there you are with a problem that you're trying to solve, and you're in a room that's pitch black dark.
Yeah.
Okay? You've got to get into the room where the lights are on in order to see what's going on. So all of that stuff about, I know the answer is get back to center, I can't get back to center, oh my God, what's the matter? What's the matter with you? You know what the answer is. You even did the workshop, for God's sake. And you still, you know, that's all happening in the dark room.
Yeah.
So some of the ways, and you know, there's tremendous resistance. Everybody runs into tremendous resistance to going to the monastery, going to a retreat. Somebody was talking to me this morning about trying to get to a yoga class, and just this incredible resistance to going to the yoga class.
Mm-hmm.
And the resistance is, if you go do these things, you're going to disidentify.
Mm-hmm.
And conditioning doesn't want you to disidentify, as you've noticed.
Yeah.
It wants you out there in that conversation about misery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what's going to be required of you between now and when are you coming out?
Well, I think it's February 15th. So
right. Okay. So not even 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Or just about 2 weeks.
Yes.
So all of your spare time needs to be spent, and you'll run into resistance, and then the voices will try to beat you up for this, but all of your spare time needs to be spent taking care of yourself. So you need to be meditating, you need to be journaling, you know, you do the dominant hand, non-dominant hand journaling, you are doing yoga, and you're walking in beautiful places, you're saying reassurances to yourself, you know, you just go into overdrive in that this is what I need to do to take care of this person who is feeling depressed. Okay, so you bring her in and you make her the, you know, princess for the week or princess for the lifetime or whatever it is. And you're doing everything that you can to help her, to support her, to take care of her, to give her the life that she has never been allowed to have. That's the assignment.
Okay.
And, you know, the good news is you'll probably have to do that for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You can't go to sleep. You can't go unconscious. You can't just allow yourself to slide off into self-hatred and beatings and punishment and nastiness. You've got to stay conscious and stay aware. You've got to continue to take care of those parts of you that suffer, to bring them in and make their life nice and happy and loving and accepting.
Okay. Yeah, it just, it gets so, it's so scary and it's so hard to connect to this when it gets to that place.
It is.
You know, just all the voices are telling me, you know, you don't deserve to be here. You shouldn't, you know, be taking up space on this planet. And I'm gonna work with this, but I get afraid that I won't even be able to connect to, you know, taking care of myself and stuff, because it just gets so bad sometimes.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, are you in Pittsburgh?
No, I'm about 3 hours from Pittsburgh. I know there's some stuff in Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
unfortunately,
Pittsburgh,
the retreat, you're going to be here in Pittsburgh. Not unfortunately, but there's a family wedding going on then, so I can't be there.
Yeah. Okay. So whatever you can find where you are,
yeah,
to get some support for yourself, take advantage of it.
Definitely, yeah.
Everything that the voices tell you you can't do, shouldn't do, it's wrong to do, do it.
You know, okay.
Yeah, every evening find something that's going to be good for you.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's hard. It is hard.
It is, and I've tried to talk to people a little about this, too, and, boy, I can't tell you the amount of, you know, I mean, I think people think I've joined a cult or something sometimes, because it's really, it's tricky to talk about this practice, I think, to a lot of folks, or at least that's been my experience so far.
And,
you know,
and you probably don't want to, actually.
Yeah, maybe it's better not to.
Yeah, I'll tell you briefly. I was talking with someone in Georgia, because I was just there in Athens, and she does this thing with a couple of people where they support one another with reflective listening on the telephone.
Mm.
And I said, you know, this is something we need to start, so that people like you, who are out there with no support in Pennsylvania or, you know, wherever people are out there with no support, there's somebody that they can connect with on a regular basis. And they can just do reflective listening. You know, not anything else. You know, it's not social. It's not problem solving. It's not any of that sort of thing. It's just like process mapping, only there's another human.
Yeah.
You know, and you talk about what's going on, and the other person reflects, and then for 10 or 15 minutes, and then you do the same for them, and you hang up, you know, you make a date to get together again. And so I think we're going to be starting that up, because it is hard, and it is scary, and you've got a lifetime, at least one lifetime, of these voices that you're trying to go up against, and sometimes they can seem so very big, and you seem so very little.
Yeah.
And we just need to get more support for one another.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful.
So when you're out here, I'm here where you are. When you're out there where Michael is,
yes,
in California in a couple of weeks, let's talk about it.
Okay.
Remind me if I have forgotten that we want to start this network of people supporting one another that way.
Thank you. That sounds great, because I'm just looking for, you know, as many ways to support myself with this practice as I can.
That's right, and that's what we got to do all the time.
Yeah.
Okay, take good care of yourself.
Thanks so much.
See you soon.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jennifer. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We're going to break now, and we'll be right back. Coming up next on Open Air, in our second segment of today's show, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious, compassionate awareness, responding to your email questions, and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Phone lines are open here, and we'd love to hear from you. The number is toll-free in North America. That's 888-514-2100. And if you're not in North America, you can call us at 001-858-277-1444. Sherry, I love that idea about reflective listening.
Isn't that good?
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So the way the people do it that I was talking about, you know, it's just that's all there is. So if you and I are reflective listening buddies, you know, we set up the time. We decide who's going to go first and who's going to go second.
Yes.
You know, if you go first, you just talk for that period of time and I reflect you. Then I talk and you reflect me, make another date and hang up. Isn't that just about as clean and simple as it could ever get?
It's brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like it. And, of course, there would need to be, you know, really strong kind of guidelines and parameters so
yeah.
that it really is supportive and doesn't get into something that, you know, where then at the end of your 10 minutes I say, well, you know, I'd like to give you some feedback. You know, I tell you what you ought to do. But if it were really clear like that, I think it could just be a tremendous support.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. That's great. Yeah, I was thinking, too, during your call with Jennifer, that in the Pittsburgh group, they do have one-day workshops there.
Yes.
On different occasions.
Yes. In fact, there's one coming up very shortly in
yes.
Pittsburgh. One of the monks is going there for the day. Absolutely, yeah.
Great.
Yeah, people. People keep an eye on the website. There's a lot of stuff going on all over the country. I know it seems like a lot to us, and I understand if you're out there somewhere. You know, it feels like miles away from kindred spirits. It doesn't seem like there's an awful lot going on. I know for me, when I said to her, you know, you can't afford not to.
Yes.
The voices of conditioning would say, you know, it's too far, it's too expensive, you can't take the time, there's too much to do, whatever it is. And when I decide, no, I need the support, so I'm going to, you know, even if I have to drive several hours or whatever, I'm gonna go to where people are doing something that is supporting my heart.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. To me, what you're pointing at is that point of not turning back.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to do this. I'm going to support myself. I have one
right.
life to save, and I'm going to do it.
That's right. It's where my time is going to go. It's where my money is going to go. While nobody's calling us, I'm guessing nobody's calling us right now.
Not in this moment.
I'll tell you about another thing that I've gotten rather passionate about on this trip, and it's this notion of 1%. And
yes.
Do you know that? Do you know the 1%?
I've heard it. I'm not very familiar with it.
Yeah. Well, apparently it's a Maharishi Mahesh.
I want to say yogi at the end. But
yeah, I think that's it, isn't it? That's all
yeah.
there is to it. It
yeah.
seems like there should be another syllable in there, but I don't think there's another syllable. Anyway, he said if 1% of the people would meditate together and focus on peace, then we could together turn things around, just 1% of the people. And I'm going to put a thing up on the website, articles that this fellow has written, where he actually did a lot of testing out of that theory in different war zones and different kinds of situations.
Wow.
And, there's one that's the one that I had heard about where they did it in Washington, D.C., and they lowered the crime rate there by 25%.
Yeah.
This guy did it in the Middle East, and he did it, I think, 7 times. He would bring people in, and they would, it was just like 200 people were meditating, and all kinds of things would happen while they were there, and then they would leave.
Yes.
And everything would go back to being chaotic and crazy, and then they
yes.
would come in and meditate again. So anyway, 1%. And I'm really excited about this as another one of those connecting points.
Yeah.
Where Jennifer was saying, you know, it's she gets a little those looks like, oh my God, you know, this is a cult or this is a very strange thing, but. The idea of coming together and meditating together simply to be present at that deep level of intention or commitment for peace and loving kindness in the world seems to be something that a lot of people, probably a lot more than 1% of the population, could actually relate to.
Yes.
And so I've been envisioning connecting up the different groups of like-minded people.
Yes.
Get together once a week, twice a week, three times, whatever people wanted to do, and meditate together, and maybe do some of that reflective listening with
yes.
one another, and then spend a little more time in silence, kind of deepening that commitment, and
yes.
then go on their way. And I have this, you know, this vision of people from all kinds of traditions and all sorts of walks of life, you know, people who would call themselves spiritual or religious, and people who would say, no, I'm not a bit, but I would still like world peace, and like that. So lots of fun ways to connect. Lots of possibilities.
Fabulous. Sign me up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, let's get together and do that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry, I have a couple of email questions here.
All right.
Sherry and Michael, as my practice develops and egocentric karmic conditioning gets craftier, I am noticing a new pattern today. The content has shifted from using what was once my, quote, mistakes, unquote, to take me out of the moment and off-center, to now using my accomplishments.
Ooh.
I recently completed my degree. It was a life goal for me, and I did it at age 44. The sensation
wow.
in my chest varies from tightness to fast heartbeat. My thoughts range from there is something I should be doing to, quote, it was no big deal, unquote, and, quote, now what are you going to do, unquote. The emotions are sadness, fear, joy, pride. I am off-center, stuck. I can observe it all, and I'm trying to breathe and not do anything. I have not experienced being in this abuse cycle with my ego over a success quite like this before. Your guidance would be most appreciated. Thank you so much for your radio show and work. I appreciate you. From a listener.
Wow, that's very nice.
Yeah.
You know, it strikes me, of course, that the listener is doing all the right stuff.
Yes.
Right? As we say all the time and have here tonight, conditioning is going to use anything to try to take us into that that place of something wrong and not enough.
Yes.
And how many of us fall for that? You know, as soon as this, when that happens, then life will be the way I want. Then I'll be happy. Then I'll feel satisfied. Then everything will be working. Then I'll have the life experience that I want. And you know, we just keep going along, and it doesn't happen, and there's a reason for that, and, well, it's because of this, or that wasn't quite the way I wanted it. And then after a while, we get to that point of realizing it's never, ever going to happen. If I'm not having it in this moment, I'm never, ever going to have it, because that when and if is just going to forever remain out there in a future that I'm never going to reach.
Yes.
So what the writer is doing is recognizing that process, watching that process. And there can be some disappointment that, oh, I thought it would be different. I thought this one really would, give me that feeling that I want. And what we can know is that conditioning is always going to be there to try to take away the good feelings. And so what this person is doing is paying attention to that, watching that process happen. And that's all we can do. There's acceptance that this is what's going on, and this is where I am, and can I be with that?
Yes.
You know, that's the practice. There isn't anything else. We want there to be something else. We want to do the practice so that we'll stop having the experiences we're having. And I would say we do practice so that we can willingly be with the experiences that we're having.
I see.
So that we can, in fact, learn to enjoy the experiences we're having, because they are the experiences we're having.
Yes.
You know, they're not a mistake.
Huh?
I'm not supposed to be somewhere else doing something else. This
yes.
is my life. This is where I am. This is where I'm supposed to be. And this is the right thing for me to be experiencing, because it's what I'm experiencing.
Yes.
So to accept that and realize that, and of course have sympathy for the person who thought it was going to be different, for the person who's worked so hard and maybe was hoping for a different kind of reward. Now, of course, one of the things that it's possible to do is recognize that this is going on and just throw a big party for the person who is so successful.
Yes.
And the voices will be there trying to ruin the good time, and we can just know that. But we can still go ahead and have the celebration and, you know, send the flowers and write the notes and, you know, just have the party.
Yes.
And also to be aware that what we're doing is learning to see how we cause ourselves to suffer so that we can accept that and let it go and end suffering.
Yes.
Yeah. So to hope that life circumstances are going to somehow make conditioning not do what it does, we're going to continue to be disappointed as long as we continue to believe that. I am required to accept myself and my life exactly as it is.
Yes.
I'm not going to become somebody so that I can then have the life that I want. That's never going to work. I'll have the life I want when I accept myself and my life exactly as it is right now.
Wow.
Then I'll have the life that I want.
So we can just have it.
It's so much easier.
No need to earn it or work hard or wait for this to happen.
That's right. And so what happens when we come back to center in that way, come back to that place of acceptance, again, is that we feel great compassion for all of the aspects of ourselves, for all of their beliefs and expectations and hopes and dreams and hurts and fears and all of the things that go on with a human being. And as we were talking about with Jennifer earlier, you know, there's just a commitment to give this person the best possible life that this person can have. And that's not an indulgent or selfish approach. It usually tends to be a very open-hearted, expansive, generous kind of approach.
Yes.
Because if you, for instance, decide that you're going to give Michael the very best possible life a human being can have, well, that includes love and kindness and generosity and connection and meaningful work and participation and all of the best things that a human being can have. And you're going to work really hard to provide all of that for him. And that's what transforms a life.
It's exciting.
It is exciting.
And we're full circle back to participation.
Yes. Yeah. So, when we were talking with John about that earlier, if John decides to participate in life fully with John and to help John, this can sound so schizophrenic or something, can it? But he decides to help John have the most fulfilling life that a human being can have. Well, there. That's a full-time participatory activity.
Yes.
And, again, a full life means connection and inclusion and participation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. It's great. All comes back to the same thing.
It does, doesn't it?
Yes.
Our practice is so simple. everything is coming back to center, seeing what pulls us out of center, how we get caught up out there. So we do all of these terribly psychological things of looking at aspects of the personality and our beliefs and assumptions and projections and all of that so that we see what it's like when we're out there in that dark room kind of stumbling around and feeling our way along.
Yeah.
And we look at that so that we can recognize where we are. We learn to come back to center, back to the room full of light where we can see clearly what's going on. And we practice staying in that well-lighted room more and more and more of the time. But everything is getting into that room.
Yes.
And then in that room, we can bring everything. We can even bring the dark room into the light room.
Yeah.
It's just that we can't maintain the dark room in the light room.
Yes. Yes. It's great.
Uh-huh.
It's a good story.
It's a good story. Yeah.
Sherry, we have 1 or 2 minutes left here. And I don't want to go into another email question because I don't think we're going to get through it in time. And I just wanted to mention a couple of things from the schedule coming up.
Okay.
A little bit further out. You're doing a retreat at the monastery starting February 15th.
Which Jennifer is coming to.
Mm-hmm. Called What is Zen?
What is Zen?
That's exciting.
Yes, it is. And, you know, speaking of workshops that are farther out, I've been talking about this while I've been on this trip, and I don't know how much we talk about it. I can't remember, as a matter of fact. But the meditation hall building retreat that's coming up in June, I was just talking to somebody yesterday who's, you know, she's arranged her schedule. She's gonna come there for the whole month. And,
wow.
Yeah. That's a very kind of a thing to do for oneself. And so just to mention that people can come for 1 week of it or two or three or all 4 weeks.
Have the dates here.
Yeah. What are the dates?
May 20th to June 18th.
Yeah. I think it's going to just be a riotous good time.
Plus,
we're going to have a meditation hall out of it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
No experience required.
A lot of retreats, we just have a retreat. You know, at the end of the retreat, well, we just had a retreat. This one, we get a meditation hall as well.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Yeah, so I'm excited about that one.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, Sherry. It's been a great show.
Well, thank you, Michael. Are we out of time?
We are out of time.
All right. Well, let's get together next week.
Let's get together next week.
And continue.
How about Tuesday evening?
Tuesday evening.
All right.
Around 5 Pacific Standard Time.
Sounds good to me.
All right.
Talk to you then.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye, Sherry.